Alrighty, let's rock this thing. 3, 2, 1. Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, February the 28th, 59th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon from sunny Fortuna, Regan Candelaria. How you doing, guy?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me again.
Good, good. Well, you know, until you really screw up, you got a no-cut contract.
You're obviously very liberal on not messing up.
Well, it is. All my buddies know that's about the only place I'm liberal. Not kind-hearted, but liberal. This afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about labor stuff. Last Thursday, we talked with Fred Van Vleck from Eureka City Schools about some of the negotiations that go on with the school systems. And we'll spend a little bit of time talking about labor-related things, not purely negotiations, but what is involved with personnel and all those various things, because most of us don't really have a clue.
Well, that's very timely because it's something we're actively involved with right now, getting ready for our next year.
I see. I thought you were going to say your favorite board game was Clue.
No, it's not. My daughter's.
Yeah, okay. Go Colonel Mustard. We'll be back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say. It's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:13. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Regan Candelaria, the city manager for the City of Fortuna. But before we do, our quote this afternoon, James Thurber. Sometime between 1894 and 1961 said, early to rise and early to bed makes a male healthy, wealthy, and dead. Oh. I take it he must have been a little bit more of, along the lines of Spuds McKenzie. Remember Spuds?
That's the dog speaking for Budweiser, I think.
Yeah. Spuds McKenzie, the original party animal. I don't know. I found YouTube a little bit too much last night. I was going through, I like old commercials.
So that's really the quote there, find you dead?
Yeah, right there.
Oh, okay. So that's a retake on the healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Yeah,
thing. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think he was a big fan of Ben Franklin. Yeah. What is the biggest surprise, Regan, that general regular guy would have about labor-related issues in government?
The biggest surprise the regular guy would have. Let's see. Well, here's one that I like to share with most people when we start talking about it. It's more directed at the public safety side when you're talking about police or fire services that cities generally employ. What most general public members don't understand about that when they start looking at our costs and the things that we're addressing is the fact that that is a 24/7 operation. You know, we have somebody available all day and all night. And when you're looking at labor, you know, like myself, and I'm not sure about how many hours you work. I know I work a little more than the normal, but, you know, you're typically an 8-to-5 kind of person, Monday through Friday. And that's one position. And when you're looking at public safety.
Just say that one more time. I'd like to hear. Yeah.
It sounds good, doesn't it? 8-to-5, Monday through Friday. That's not our normal schedule. But that's the average employees. You know, everybody considers that the regular work week. And when you look at public safety, that's not good enough. You have to multiply that by 3 because you're covering that 8-hour shift 3 times in one day. So in terms of your costs for employment in public safety, it's not just, you know, one person once a day. We're having to do 3 times as much in terms of funding to support the positions that we have that are available 24/7.
I seem to recall to the 90s, it was pretty commonplace for like the sheriff's department and a lot of other departments to have overtime. Overtime was just built in. That was part of the budget. We know it's going to happen. We're not sure when. We're not sure how. But it seems like, you know, there's always overtime. How do you budget for something that you don't have any idea what the real number will be or the application? Just trends?
That's an interesting question. Yes, you go on prior years' experiences. You take a look at some things that might be affecting you coming down with new legislation in the future. You know, you look at the changes that might be being made at the county level. I know in my previous position, you know, the county was making some changes to basically booking, you know, availability and whether or not they were going to have their facility open during certain times. And so we were having to travel different distances. So you look at your budget and you go, oh, God, this is the new reality. We're going to need more overtime because our guys are going to be spending an extra hour every time they book someone. And we have past numbers for how many times we expect them to be gone. So now we're adding to that and figuring out what we have. But really, it's somewhat of a crapshoot, but you try and base it on past experiences and as much data as you have. And you hope not to use it. You know, obviously, you're trying to limit that to the extent possible because it's very costly. But
it's
but
not seen as a cushion, though, is it?
It's definitely not. But in, for instance, in public safety and in the policing side, you know that you have to go to court, you know, a certain number of times. And, you know, you were trying to cover a 24/7 activity, as I mentioned earlier. Sometimes somebody's got to go to court. Sometimes somebody's got a vacation day schedule. Sometimes somebody's actually sick. I mean, they do happen. We are humans in this field. And so, you know, you factor that in based on past experiences and know that you're going to have a certain amount of that you're just going to have to address.
So if overtime is one of those questionable areas in COP,
okay.
What about public works? Is that a little bit easier? I mean, yeah, we're going to have floods. Yeah, we're going to have wind. Yeah, we're going to have the parade. Okay, got it. But is that a closer to accurate budget anticipation than things like COPs are?
Probably not. We probably have less consistent data on the public work side because you're never sure when things are going to happen. If you have, you know, community events that are annual, like for instance in Fortuna, you know, we've got the rodeo and the expo and, you know, the apple harvest and these things that we know are going on and I can schedule for that and go, I know I'm going to have some extra work setting up streets and tearing down and doing cleanup and addressing a lot of the things that we're involved with as part of those community events. But then the extra rain events or the stoppage in the you know, the sewer pipes or, you know, the leak here at this water main or this water meter, those.
That's the 8-to-5 part.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
We really, you never know when that's going to happen. And sometimes it happens. We were just discussing it this morning. Sometimes it happens right before work. Sometimes it happens right after, you know, so then you've got call outs to deal with where it's not just overtime. It's other stuff.
KINS, News and Information Times, 319.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on two annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spay or neuter their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Regan Candelaria from Fortuna. Regan, some of the different challenges I would think with labor-related are the unexpected. I guess that's kind of what we're talking about a little bit with overtime, but you know overtime's going to come down.
Mm-hmm.
A department head leaving, getting a job offer, a surprise out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody... unfortunately, you know, Tom Cook, you know, of Fortuna, not working for, mm-hmm. had a medical situation, knocks you out of the ballpark.
Right.
Things like that, that you kind of sort of almost know something might happen, but it's not as regular as overtime. you go ish on the budget line or plus 2% or...
We try to roll with it, of course, as those things come up that are unexpected and unforeseen. But in terms of the budget, you know, it's kind of interesting. Sometimes when you have a loss of a position, you know, for or a person that's filling a position, you know, you actually kind of save some money until you figure out what to do with that or you replace that position. You know, so there's a little bit of a
cost. Yeah, if you can stretch it out.
Yeah, a little bit of a cost savings there. But you have to fill that role and you have to fill that need. So sometimes you have a temp come in. And you hope that those even up, you know, the cost that you're spending on an hourly basis as opposed to that's, you know, salary and benefits combined. So you're hoping that works out. Sometimes you got somebody that can underfill a position or take those responsibilities over, but then you've got another hole a little bit lower. And, you know, dollar-wise, sometimes that'll kind of even out over the course of the fiscal year. But really, the real cost and what we do try and build into the budget is recruitment. You know, the whole process for human resources where, you know, you see a need, you see an opening, or you see a you know, opportunity for a new position that needs to get filled, some succession planning or whatever that's creating that need. So you put it in the budget that we're going to need to do a recruitment. It's going to cost us some dollars for putting together a flyer and job descriptions, making sure that we negotiate with unions, labor relations, if that's required. Making sure that we're able to post and publish that opening and opportunity, and then going through the recruitment process and interviewing people and doing background checks and all of that, you know, and getting them scheduled. So there's the big process, and that does cost money. And so we try to build that into each department, knowing that, you know, there's always some shifting and changing in a retirement or something, something unforeseen. So we try to have that money in the budget to address those positions.
How do you determine whether or not it's going to be an in-house hire, slap a flyer on the window of City Hall, a headhunter? I mean, I'm sure various positions have different degrees of value. I guess is the simplest way, and or a narrowly defined skill set. The higher or more difficult it is, the more apt it is you're going to be spending more money. Do you get that granular, or do you just kind of say, okay, here's a couple bucks, plink, and it goes in there, and 9 out of 10 times, that's what it takes to fill those positions?
We have a good sense of that for the different levels of positions that we have, but really you have to analyze each one. And as you have an opening, you want to see where within the organization that falls. And, you know, sometimes you've got a whole ladder set up where you've got like a tech 1, 2, or 3, or you've got a specialist and then an associate and then whatever. So you've got some ladders built up so that if you lose a specific position, the person right below you're hoping can fill that void.
And you just kind of pull them up the ladder.
Yeah, exactly. And so you do that analysis as you lose one. If you get up to like a department head type of position or director, then what you're talking about, you probably need to do a little bit more of the extra work to get that filled.
Then you snipe from Arcata, right? Isn't that kind of been the philosophy?
If there's someone available and interested, I'm not going to turn them away. But
well, we got to have something to talk to Randy about in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. So, but there are different levels, and I would never want to steal from Randy. He's too nice a guy.
And he lives in Fortuna, so he knows where some of the bodies are.
He does have a background in law enforcement, too, so you never want to mess around there.
Yeah. Guys with guns, pay him attention. Yeah. What percent turnover is there typically if there are 100 people in a city government pod? Mm-hmm. Okay, you would tend to think if somebody's got a 20-year or 25-year working cycle, okay, every 4 years, you're going to be rolling those positions over and you've got that percent turnover. Is it just my sense, or does it come in waves rather than a constant?
You know, you kind of threw out a scenario that's pretty much Fortuna. We have about 100 people, you know, 77, you know, full-time employees, and then it gets up to about 110 total with our part-time people. So that kind of is our model. I just wish I did have the history and, you know, the trends for our organization, which I don't yet.
Well, Greg, make it City USA, so it's not Fortuna specific. Is there a constant or a consistent number, or does it tend to really vacillate?
I think it changes a lot in my experience, and you know, it depends on the age, you know, the demographics basically of your organization. If you got a lot of people that are getting towards retirement age, you know, you better be doing some succession planning and be prepared. You know, especially the way a lot of the retirement systems have been changing over the last few years, retirements are up. You know, people want to be done and get the maximum out of their salaries.
It's 3:30.
This is Fred Van Vleck, Eureka City School Superintendent. Exciting new things are happening in our district next year. Reducing our kinder through third grade class size to 23-1. Eliminating our combination classes in the reopening of Winship Middle School. Remember, we are the largest district on the North Coast, allowing us to have the most diverse course in extracurricular offerings. Enrollment is happening now. Please stop by the district office across from Eureka High School or visit the website at eurekacityschools.org.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 4:35. We're back to...
Start again?
Yeah, wrong hour. We were there for about 20 years. Changed it about a year and a half ago. I've gotten out of...
Oh, that was just
had the routine, and then I relaxed instead of thinking. Silly me. Okay, I got 5 seconds. We'll start up on 31 instead of 30. 3, 2, 1, Mark. Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Regan Candelaria from the City of Fortuna. Regan, with the negotiation process itself, we hear things called bargaining units. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think most of us can kind of get our hands around that one, and we understand similar job functions. Okay, simple right. enough. Why are there some employees that are not represented in the dynamic? Where did that one come from?
There is a specific group in most cities, most governmental organizations that are non-represented. And a lot of times it either has to do with their role as a supervisor or manager. Sometimes it has to do with their, you know, knowledge of practices and programs. You want to have people that are confidential employees. And so they fall within that non-represented section of your employees so that, you know, there's information, say, from a human resources nature that might be confidential, negotiations that the council might be doing on specific projects that need to remain confidential. So that's somewhat of a specialized class. So
it's kind of like access to information then is a common point.
Yes.
Okay. Part-timers are part-timers, or part-timers, do they also kind of fall under these umbrellas?
They're usually not represented. They're usually, you know, at-will employees that, you know, you can utilize with a lot more flexibility than somebody that is full-time with benefits and represented by an association or a union or something.
Now, a lot of private business is opting to have more part-time because of the economic environment that we're in. Do governmental entities have that flexibility also, or because of the union and unions and some of the relationships and contracts that are in play, does that one not really get embraced?
Well, it's another excellent question. You always have good questions that are very timely. When you're looking at an organization like ours, and we try to employ part-time people, you know, a lot of astute you know, unions and labor groups will say, well, why do you need part-time people? You should have somebody that's full-time, and they will push for that because, of course, they want more membership in their organization, and that's who they represent. They don't get to represent the part-time person. So they'd like you to have more full-time people. And so it's just, you know, it's...
Could you do a city other than, like, I would imagine cops?
This is an update
on the... Maybe, you know, if there's a paid fire department with part-times?
It's possible, but you know, probably not as feasible. Yeah, not as practicable. When you talk about training and you know history and you know knowledge of your job and expectations of the organization, you want somebody there that's full time. You know, for some you know lower level jobs or you know some of the recreation programs and things that aren't real intense and that you can get away with, you know, shorter
hours.
Those
are really seasonal too.
Yeah, they're seasonal and they're after school hours to provide youth programs because that's when the kids are there. So part-time makes sense for a lot of that.
Is there much tension between the two? Whether you make a determination to go full-time, part-time, is there any residual on that stuff?
Not that I've seen. You know, they're usually pretty agreeable. Like I said, though, when you start to get to where we're going to hire, you know, three new part-timers to accomplish this task, then you might have a union rep and say, well, hey, why don't you have a full-time person do that and accomplish those tasks? So,
can you go with three part-time knowing that two are going to survive and you'll end up with two full-timers down the road, but you're not sure which are going to be your two?
Well, that tends to be a training ground as well. Like you say, sometimes you get an opportunity to see someone's work ethic and their style and their commitment, and you know it helps you to build your ranks of the full-time people. So that is a good opportunity.
A labor contract. I think most of us are somewhat familiar with either a contract, a baseball player, say, since it's baseball season.
Yay.
A baseball contract. Okay, you sit down, it's X number of years, X number of compensation, blah, 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 blah. You sign it and everybody celebrates and they go out and, you know, blow off $1 million or $2. Okay. Is there a lot of transferability with what we see in that scenario versus a contract that you might sit down with whoever the union head is, hammer out whatever the deal is, and then both sides sign?
Well, in terms of how that process works, I would say it's probably fairly similar. But we're talking about, you know, a couple of representatives that are representing a group of, you know, 40, 50, you know, employees in our case. And so it's not just, you know, what employees X, Y, and Z want. It's what the entire group wants as a collective group. So as you discuss those things and you negotiate those terms of the agreement of providing those services, they bring that back and they need to come together as a whole group and say, yes, that is the deal that we want. It's not just a, you know, 3-year deal to play shortstop. It's a 3-year deal to have a shortstop and a third baseman and a second baseman. And they all agree that that's what they're going to get paid for those jobs that they're providing of fielding grounders or, you know, hitting base hits or whatever.
Winning, man. Just make it winning. During that time frame when you're working through that process, do you have to use some of those overtime hours that we were alluding to backfill in somebody who is doing the negotiating, or do they bring in another individual who isn't an employee of the city to do the negotiation?
Well, it's different for each case, whether they have representation or not. But typically we have some ground rules that are set up, and that'll usually be the first thing that we do at the first meeting. And, you know, there's a standard practice of allowing the representatives that are members of the organization and working for you, you know, a little bit of compensation for a couple of hours to participate in the negotiation meetings. And so that's kind of an agreed upon practice.
So the tenor in that is, hey, Bob, how you doing? Welcome, Mr. Smith. How does that play? Is it normal guys talking normal, or does it?
Well, there's women involved as well, of course.
All right.
But yeah,
well, you don't want to call her Bob. I'll give you that as
Roberta. But yeah. It's difficult. I mean, and it puts, you know, management in a difficult position because we're kind of a go-between the city council, who makes the policy decision of how much we're going to expend for our services each year. And so we're sitting at the table and we're trying to make the best deal possible for the organization. And then you have to work together for the rest of the year or term of that contract. So it can be difficult, you know, and you try to keep a positive attitude and keep things as amicable as possible. And
that's where the beer comes into play?
No, we don't have beer during our negotiations.
Might help out. Yeah. Yeah. You're not even going to respond, are you? KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:43. We'll be back with more from Reagan Candelaria.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:45. We're back to talk shop this afternoon. Final couple minutes with Regan Candelaria. Regan, with labor negotiations, how do you handle the discipline? Is that part of the agreement that is hammered out? If somebody goes stupid, if somebody goes crazy, what's a firing offense? All those types of things. Is that also in the contract, or do you have a latitude, or department have a latitude as the boss?
Well, not really. It's not really part of the negotiations. There's a policy manual that, you know, talks about how to handle all of those things. And, you know, you do negotiate some of the different points within that policy manual as part of your salary negotiations, your contract. But generally, that's a separate item. And each individual case of discipline that might come up for whatever reason, you know, some of the which you mentioned, you know, they're all going to be individual cases with individual circumstances. So
does the handbook also come under jurisdiction of labor negotiations?
Yes, the policy manual. Yes, that's definitely something that we, you know, it's part of the memorandum of understanding that says we're going to use this policy manual, and this is how we handle these disputes. This is how we handle this type of discipline, and so we're required to follow that. And there's, you know, a whole process there.
As California labor law then changes, as fluid as it does, does that reopen negotiations, or do you just say, and whatever they say, we're going to put into the book until the end of this contract?
That's a good question. I think we're going to go
too granular.
With,
is that what you're
yes,
saying?
Yes, yeah. And we're likely going to go with what we've already agreed upon in the policies that we already have in place.
Well, let's say the Family Leave Act came into play sometime, I'm sure, during a term of a labor contract.
Mm-hmm.
Do you honor the contract? Do you honor the state law? Do you have to renegotiate the labor cut? I mean, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, those. I'm going to have to consult my city attorney on that. Really, those things.
On this one, huh?
Those are, you know, I'd be silly to try and answer that and be correct on it, because, like you said, they change so often, and we really do rely on some of our consultants, whether it be our risk managers through our insurance organization, or our city attorney directly, and, you know, our organization that provides our health insurances have attorneys that help, you know, counsel us on the best way to handle things. And, you know, we need to go there as often as possible to take advantage of those resources and make sure we get it right.
But those guys do get visited whenever the new changes come down through the pipeline.
Yes. I mean, right now, one of the things you're talking about, you know, from the federal government, from our president, you know, the new health reform. We're just right now struggling on how to deal with that and how to pay for it and what it's going to mean to us.
I talked yesterday with Estelle from the county, and they have absolutely no idea what Obamacare really is going to do in phases, what it's going to do, let alone at the end of full implementation, what that means. And are those negotiated things in the contracts, or is that something that you have to do? So, no, we're not going to negotiate because you're going to have to do it anyway. Why should we have to give up something? And you get into that tension and that dynamic also.
Yeah. So that is just going to be very difficult on all of us, because there's a few things that you have to determine, and it even does come down to a coin flip sometimes. Whether do you want to try and meet those guidelines, or do you want to just take the fine? You know, it might be more cost effective to just get fined for not providing, you know, what they're recommending needs to be provided. So, is that better? I don't think so, but it might be better for the organization. So,
well, that's because you guys are over 50.
We have more than 50
threshold.
Employees.
Boy, does everybody know that thing exists.
We are definitely on in the new game. So.
Oh, boy. Well, have fun.
Thank you.
We've been talking shop this afternoon with Regan Candelaria. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more talk shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.